Okay, so you know how everyone's always talking about spiritual gifts, right? Like you've probably heard about them in church or, just in conversations about faith. But like, have you ever stopped and thought, what are these things really all about? Like, how do they actually work in a community?
Right.
Because sometimes the explanations can feel kind of surface level,
Yeah.
and you're left wondering, like, what's the deeper meaning here?
Exactly.
Well, in today's deep dive, we're going to dig a little deeper into all that.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to be exploring the nature and function of spiritual gifts.
Yes.
And we're not going for just a, simple overview
Yeah,
here.
yeah.
We're going to unpack what the Apostle Paul had to say about spiritual gifts in his first letter to the Corinthians,
Okay.
specifically in chapters 12 through 14.
Right.
And to help us understand all this, we've got a lecture from Dr. Gary Metters, who spent a lot of time studying these texts.
That's right.
You shared a lecture 28 with us, which is
Yes.
where Dr. Metters really dives into this section of 1
That's
Corinthians.
the one.
And it's really crucial to remember that Paul wasn't just writing, some abstract theological essay
Oh,
here.
definitely
He
not.
was addressing real questions and issues that were coming up in that early church community in Corinth
Yeah.
about how these spiritual gifts were being understood and used.
Yeah, it was a practical issue for
It was
them.
a real problem for them.
Yeah.
So our goal in this deep dive is to understand exactly what Paul, through Dr. Metters' insights, reveals about these spiritual gifts.
Right.
We want to get to the heart of their purpose, how they actually show up in a community,
Yeah.
and especially why this gift of speaking in tongues became
Yes.
such a big point of contention back in Corinth.
A huge issue for them. Yeah.
It wasn't just a, oh, let's just not talk about it. It was
Right.
a serious issue.
Yeah.
So this isn't just about understanding an ancient text, right?
No.
Like, why should we care about this today?
Well, because it can actually give you a richer perspective on how different abilities and contributions work within any community that's trying to achieve a common purpose.
Okay, so to get started here, where does Paul even start this whole discussion?
Okay.
What's the wider context of these three chapters,
Right.
12, 13 and 14,
Yes.
within the book of 1 Corinthians?
Well, these three chapters make up a really distinct and important section of the book.
Okay.
It's almost entirely focused on spiritual gifts.
Okay.
So chapter 12 introduces the whole idea, like what are these gifts? How are they given?
Yeah.
Then you have chapter 13.
Everyone knows chapter 13.
Yes,
I
famously,
love
the
chapter.
love chapter, right?
Yeah.
Where Paul dives into this, crucial role of love.
Right.
And then chapter 14 kind of rounds it out
Okay.
by offering some really practical guidance on how these gifts, particularly tongues,
Okay.
should be used in a church setting.
So it's not like chapter 13 is this like pause button on the gift conversation.
No, not at all.
It's like integral to the whole thing.
Yeah, Dr. Meters actually emphasizes that chapter 13 is like this essential link, almost like the spine holding chapters 12 and 14 together.
Oh, okay.
So a key insight here is that Paul structured this whole discussion very carefully.
Okay.
He put love right in the center.
Right in the middle.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this tells you that any understanding of spiritual gifts has to be rooted in love
Okay.
if it's going to be aligned with Paul's intent.
So it's not about showing off your own abilities. It's about how do we use these gifts to build up the community in love? Now,
Exactly.
this is where it gets really
Oh, tell
interesting.
me more.
Dr. Meters brings up this structural thing within these chapters called a chiasm.
Okay,
Can
yes.
you explain what a chiasm is and
Yeah.
what it reveals about Paul's emphasis here?
Yeah, so a chiasm is basically like a mirrored pattern in writing where ideas are presented in an ABCBA order,
Okay.
and that middle point, the C, is usually the most important part.
Oh, okay.
So in this case, Dr. Meters points out that the very beginning of the section in 12.1-3, where Paul says, Jesus is Lord,
Okay.
that's our A.
Right.
And the very end of the section in 14.37-40,
Okay.
where he again stresses teaching that Jesus is Lord, that's
Right.
our other A.
Right.
And then you have 12.420 talking about the unity and diversity of gifts,
Okay.
that's our B.
Got it.
And then chapter 14, which is all about order and how those gifts are used,
Right.
our other B.
Yeah.
And right smack in the middle, the C
This.
chapter 13
Yeah.
on the supreme importance of love.
So this whole chiasm structure
Yeah.
really emphasizes that this entire conversation about gifts,
Yes.
all the different kinds of how they're used, is totally framed by love. And
Absolutely.
it comes back to this central truth that Jesus is Lord.
Yeah.
So it's not about like individual spiritual achievements. It's about the community and how that community functions together.
Yes, under Christ's authority.
Under Christ's authority.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Maters also reminds us that Paul is writing to address these specific issues in Corinth related to how the gifts were actually being expressed.
Right.
And this overemphasis on speaking in tongues seems to have been a big problem there.
It really does, yeah.
Like, it seems like some people were using this gift in a way that drew attention to themselves rather than building up others.
Yeah, it seems like it was causing some division and disorder in the community.
And Dr. Maters makes a really interesting point about how this detailed discussion of spiritual gifts is kind of unique in the New Testament.
Yes, it is.
We don't really see the same level of focus in later letters like Ephesians or the letters to Timothy and Titus, which also talk about church life and practice. So why do you think that is?
Well, the fact that Paul dedicates so much space to this topic in 1 Corinthians might suggest that the issues in Corinth were maybe particularly unique.
Okay.
Or just really challenging.
Yeah.
And they needed this kind of in-depth attention.
Yeah.
But the fact that we don't see this same kind of extended discussion in those other letters, which are also giving instructions about church life, does make you wonder about how the understanding and expression of these gifts may have developed over time.
Like, did things change?
Yeah, it's a good question to think about.
Now, when we talk about spiritual gifts, the English word gift can be a little misleading, can't it?
It really can.
Like, you think of birthday presents or Christmas gifts.
Exactly.
And it makes it sound like these are just individual possessions.
It does.
That we get.
Right. Like something you own.
Yeah.
But Dr. Maters points out that's not really what Paul's getting at.
Yeah.
And he even highlights that the common Greek word for gift doron doesn't actually appear in these chapters at all.
So what are the key Greek terms that we need to understand then?
Okay, so the two main ones are pneumatikos and charisma.
Okay, pneumatikos.
Yes, pneumatikos is an adjective that comes from the word pneuma, which means spirit.
Okay.
But it can also refer to things like wind or breath.
Okay.
And importantly, the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Or even the human spirit.
Okay.
So pneumatikos as an adjective describes something as spiritual.
Right.
So you have things like a spiritual body, spiritual food. Spiritual songs.
Okay.
And Dr. Maters points out that it's not often used to describe believers themselves as spiritual people.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's never used in relation to Jesus himself.
Huh. Okay.
So that's a really important distinction.
Yeah, that is.
But keep in mind.
Okay. And then charisma.
Yes. Charisma is a noun.
Okay.
And it comes from the word charis.
Which means
grace. So in this context, it refers to a special manifestation of divine presence, activity power, or grace.
So it's often translated as gift,
right?
But Dr. Maters isn't super happy with that translation.
No, he's not a huge fan of it.
Because it can lead to those misunderstandings we talked about.
Exactly. He does mention the phrase pneumatikon charisma in Romans 1.11, which literally means spiritual charisma.
Okay.
And that's usually how it's translated, you know, spiritual gifts.
Right, right.
But it's important to remember it's about this manifestation of grace.
Yeah, so it sounds less like a tangible object that you receive and more like a demonstration or an expression that's connected to the Spirit in God's grace.
Exactly.
And Dr. Maters points to a really key verse that helps us understand this definition.
He does.
What is that verse?
It's 1 Corinthians 12.7, which says, "Now to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good."
All right, so break that down for us.
Okay, so this verse is really emphasizing that these so-called spiritual gifts are really ways that the Spirit's work becomes visible or active through individual believers.
Okay.
And their whole purpose is to benefit the entire community.
Right.
Not just the individual who has the gift.
It's not about you.
No, it's about serving others.
Yeah.
Using what you've been given to help the whole group.
So manifestation of the Spirit.
Yes.
Let's dig into that phrase a bit more.
Okay.
What does that tell us about what these gifts actually are?
So Dr. Maters explains that a manifestation of the Spirit is an ability or a way of serving that the Spirit makes active within believers.
Okay.
And through that activity, the presence and power of the Spirit become evident.
Okay.
And he makes a comparison to Jesus' teaching about recognizing a tree by its fruit. So in the same way, we should be looking at the actions and attitudes within a church that align with what the Bible says the Spirit produces.
Okay.
Things like love, joy, peace, patience, These are all indicators that the spirit is at work in that community.
So rather than looking for some kind of like mystical experience, we should look for the outward expressions.
Yeah, the results.
The results as a way to see the spirit's activities.
Exactly.
Now, Dr. Manners gets into a little bit of Greek grammar here.
He does. He likes his Greek.
Looking at the genitive case in the phrase manifestation of the spirit.
Yes.
And he mentions that scholars have debated whether this means the spirit produces the manifestation or whether the manifestation reveals the spirit.
Right.
So what's the significance of that distinction?
Well, Dr. Mitters points out that many people automatically assume that it's the spirit directly causing these gifts.
Right. Like it's a zap from heaven.
Or like a supernatural zapping.
Yeah.
But he says that an objective understanding is also valid, where the gifts, or rather the actions and behaviors of believers, actually make the spirit known to others.
So it's not necessarily that the spirit is directly causing the gift, but the way that you use the gift makes the spirit known.
Exactly.
Okay.
And ultimately, he suggests that both interpretations could fit the context.
Oh, wow.
Which just goes to show that spiritual language can be complex and have layers of meaning.
It's not always cut and dry.
Exactly.
So while scholars might debate the finer points of Greek grammar, the key takeaway for us is that spiritual gifts are seen as both something produced by the Spirit and something that remains the Spirit's work.
Yeah, both perspectives emphasize the Spirit's active role.
Yeah.
It's not just about us doing our own thing.
Yeah, it's not just our own talent.
Right, the Spirit is involved somehow.
Now, this leads to another interesting point Dr. Meters makes.
Okay, what's that?
About spiritual language often being metaphorical and descriptive.
Yes, he says it's not always meant to be taken literally.
Okay.
So how does that affect our understanding of spiritual gifts? So he argues that in the church, where we believe the Spirit is present and active.
Right.
Any activity that strengthens the community for spiritual purposes is often attributed to the Spirit.
Okay.
And even if that skill or ability is something natural.
Okay, so give us an example.
Okay, so imagine you thank God for helping you avoid a car accident.
Okay.
Because you were thinking clearly. Now, that clear thinking is a natural human ability.
Right.
But in a Christian worldview, you still see the positive outcome.
Yeah.
As connected to God's grace and provision.
So you might be thanking God for something that on the surface looks like it was just your own doing.
Exactly.
But you're acknowledging that God was still at work in that situation.
Yes, even in our natural abilities.
So if someone's a really gifted teacher and they use that to teach Sunday school.
Right.
It's not necessarily that they got some brand new supernatural ability to teach.
Right.
It's that their natural talent, when used for a spiritual purpose, becomes a manifestation of the Spirit.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a spiritual gift in that practical sense.
It's how they're using it.
Yeah, the purpose behind it.
Yeah.
So Dr. Meters is emphasizing that spiritual gifts are really functions or activities that are exercised within the church for spiritual growth and formation.
So it's less about this mystical view of gifts, like you get zapped with this amazing ability.
Right.
It's more about how we practically contribute to the community.
Exactly. It's about using what we have for the good of others.
Now, the New Testament does give us these lists of spiritual gifts.
It does.
So what can we learn from those lists?
Well, Dr. Meters points out that there are four main lists in the New Testament.
Okay.
You have 1 Corinthians 12.8-10, 1 Corinthians 12.28, Romans 12.6-8. And Ephesians 4.11.
Okay.
And it's really important to notice that these lists aren't identical.
How so?
Well, they list different gifts.
Okay.
They list them in different orders. And none of them claims to be a complete or exhaustive list.
So they're not saying this is all the gifts there are.
Right. These are just examples of the kinds of things the Spirit does in the church.
Now, the list in Ephesians 4.1 seems a little different.
It is a little different.
How so?
Well, it doesn't actually list specific abilities.
Okay.
It lists types of people.
Like what?
So it talks about apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers.
Oh, okay.
And it's emphasizing the roles that these individuals play in equipping other believers for ministry.
Okay.
And in building up the church.
So it's focused on leadership.
Yes. It's about the people who are helping to lead and guide the community.
So we can see from these lists, they're giving us examples of how the Spirit works.
Yes.
But they're not meant to be these strict rule books.
Yeah.
You don't have to find your name on the list and say, oh, this is my gift.
It's not a checklist.
Yeah.
It's more about understanding the different ways God works in people's lives.
Now, even if you took all those gifts from all four of those lists and put them together, it still wouldn't be a complete picture of all the spiritual gifts.
Right. Because Dr. Maters argues that as the church changes, as it faces new challenges and operates in new cultures, new gifts and abilities are going to emerge.
So the list is always growing and changing.
Exactly.
So what are some examples of that?
Okay, so think about it.
Yeah.
The early church didn't have sound technicians or web designers.
Yeah.
But those are vital roles in churches today.
Yeah, totally.
You know, who's running the live stream? Who's making sure the website is up to date?
Yeah.
Those are gifts too.
And Dr. Maters talks about some other modern examples.
Yeah,
like
he does.
Being a Sunday school coordinator.
Right. Someone who's really organized and keeps things running smoothly.
Yeah.
Or someone who serves as a janitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quietly and effectively taking care of the practical needs of the building.
Yeah.
Or a welcoming usher who makes people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Or someone who's really good with technology.
Right.
Like running the sound system or creating presentations.
Yeah.
These are all vital contributions to the church today.
Yeah.
Even though they're not specifically named in those ancient lists.
So the point is, it's not about finding your name on a list. It's
right.
about how are you serving?
Exactly.
How are you doing?
How are you contributing to the life of the church?
Right.
Dr. Maters suggests that if you feel like you don't have a spiritual gift, it's not necessarily because you're missing from the list.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely because you're not actively involved in the church.
Okay.
In a way that's helping it to function and thrive.
So it's not what's my gift. It's
right.
how am I serving?
Exactly.
How am I contributing?
What are you doing to make a difference in your community?
Dr. Maters even asks this really interesting question.
Yeah, what is it?
What kinds of functions or abilities might we recognize as gifts in our churches today?
Right.
Given our specific needs and culture that aren't mentioned in the Bible.
It's a great question to think about.
So we've talked about what spiritual gifts are and the nature of these biblical lists.
Yes.
What are some of the key observations we can draw from all this?
Okay. So first, just to recap.
Yeah.
Gifts are essentially functions or activities that help the church to fulfill its mission.
Okay.
And they operate under the guidance and empowerment of the Spirit.
Yeah.
So it's really about what we do.
Right.
Not just what we feel or think.
Actions speak louder than words.
They really do in this case.
Yeah.
And Dr. Maters also makes a helpful distinction between what some might consider more miraculous gifts.
Like what?
Things like healing or prophecy and those more ordinary functions.
Okay.
Like encouraging others.
Yeah.
Or providing practical help.
Right.
Both are important.
Both are gifts?
Yes.
Okay.
He also reminds us that even things like our skills or aspects of our character that we had before becoming Christians can become spiritual gifts.
Okay.
When we use them in a Christian context.
Right. So if you were really good at organizing before you were a Christian.
Yeah.
And now you use that to organize the church picnic.
Exactly.
That's a gift.
It's a gift.
Oh, okay.
You're using what you have to bless others.
Now, he does acknowledge that there's a lot of discussion about the role of those more miraculous gifts today. Like, do those still happen?
Right. Are they still active?
Yeah.
This big question.
It's a big debate.
Yeah.
But his main point is that all the lists in the Bible are products of their time and culture.
Yes. They were written for specific situations.
Right.
So it's very likely that the church will continue to recognize new gifts as new needs arise in different times and places.
Yeah, like we were just talking about with the technology stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't on the list back then.
No, but it's essential now.
So if we're not supposed to just look at a list to find our gift.
Right.
How does a church actually identify the gifts that its members have?
Okay, so Dr. Maters is very clear that it's the community, the church as a whole, that identifies spiritual gifts.
Not the individual saying, I have this gift.
Right, it's not about self-proclamation.
Yeah.
It's about the community recognizing and affirming.
So how does that work in practice?
Okay, so first it requires that the congregation think critically about their needs.
Like, what are the gaps in ministry?
Yeah, what areas need help?
Where are we struggling?
Exactly. What are the practical things that need to be done?
So it's about looking outward.
Yes.
At what the community needs.
Exactly.
Not just inward at what I want to do.
Right. It's about serving others.
Yeah.
Not just fulfilling our own desires.
And then what's the second thing?
Second, it involves observing how different members are already functioning.
Okay.
So who's already stepping up?
Yeah.
Who's making a positive impact?
Whose efforts are actually producing good results?
Exactly.
Okay.
And Dr. Maters stresses that individuals shouldn't just declare their own gifts.
Right.
Or demand a specific role.
It's not about entitlement.
No, it's about humility and service.
He gives the example of someone who feels called to teach Sunday school.
Right.
but maybe they're not very good at it.
Yeah, maybe they're not connecting with the students.
Right.
Or keeping their attention.
Or maybe they just don't prepare well.
Right.
So the desire might be there, but the effectiveness might not be.
Sometimes our desires and our gifts don't align perfectly.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
It's about being open to where we can best serve.
Okay. And then what's the third thing?
The third thing is recognizing God-ordained leadership in the church.
Okay.
Like those apostles, prophets, pastors, and teachers we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
These leaders play a key role in guiding the community.
Yeah.
And helping to identify and nurture the gifts within the body.
So they're kind of like the coaches.
Yeah. You know,
they're helping people to identify their strengths.
Exactly.
And develop their skills.
Yes.
Okay.
And Dr. Meters also cautions against this individualistic view of gifts.
Where it's all about me and my gifts.
Yeah, like it's my special possession
yeah.
that I can use however I want.
Right.
So that's a common problem in Western Christianity.
Yeah.
We tend to be very individualistic.
So the key takeaway for you
yes.
is that discovering your spiritual gifts is not a solo mission.
It's not.
It's about being part of a community.
Yes.
And looking for needs.
Right.
Stepping in to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And letting the community alarm where you're making a difference.
Exactly.
Not what's my gift. It's how can I serve?
How can you use what you have to bless others?
This has been a really helpful deep dive.
It has.
So just to sum up some of the key ideas for you.
Okay.
Spiritual gifts are manifestations of the Spirit for the common good.
Yes.
They're expressed through all sorts of different functions and abilities within the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one size fits all, right? It's diverse. And these gifts are recognized and affirmed by the community.
Yeah.
And they should always be exercised in love.
Love is the key.
Yeah.
It's the foundation of everything.
The lists in the Bible are great examples.
They are.
But they're not exhaustive.
Right. They're not the be-all and end-all.
And they're not limiting.
No. They're meant to inspire us.
Yeah.
And help us understand the different ways God works.
So to leave you with a final thought,
okay.
instead of asking what's my gift?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe ask, what are the needs in my community?
Yeah, what are the real tangible things that need to be done
right.
in your church,
yeah.
in your neighborhood,
yeah.
in your city?
And how can I use my abilities, my passions, my skills to meet those needs
right.
in a way that really builds up others?
Exactly.
It's about getting involved,
yes.
participating, and seeing where you can make a difference.
And paying attention to what brings you joy.
Yeah.
It gives you energy.
Yeah.
Those are often good indicators of where your gifts lie.